From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
Coming up live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
This week on The Business, we get a rare look behind the scenes and go into the control room of American Idol. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stay close. It's The Business from KCRW. I'm joined in the studio by John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Back from Sundance, John?
Just back, Kim.
Mm-hmm. And give us your report.
Not a lot of business. Through the first 6 days of the festival, there were only two significant multi-million dollar deals for the thriller Buried and the family comedy The Kids Are All Right. One for $3.2 million, one for about $5 million. Those are the kinds of deals you might see in 2 days, maybe 3 days, but for almost the first full week to see that kind of business. I think what I've seen is people coming out of movies talking about not, you know, they like the movies, but they're trying to find reasons why they shouldn't buy them. What is the worst case scenario for this film rather than, I love this movie, let's figure out a way to purchase it.
Is this partly because, as we know, John Cooper has taken over and is trying to return Sundance to the indie roots, so you think he's chosen material that's simply not as commercial, or there's just too much caution, or both?
I think it's both. I mean, the opening night film was James Franco and Howl, and if a opening night, even though it wasn't technically the opening night film, it was the first film shown. If any film can kind of set the mood for a festival, this did. Very arty, not terribly accessible.
I think some people were howling as they left the theater, right?
Those that were still awake. It's the kind of movie that maybe 5, 10 years ago somebody would have bought, and it did not sell through the first week of the festival. And I think, yes, Cooper's programming was a little artier, less commercial. But I also think there are fewer buyers. I mean, remember, Miramax is gone, Warner Independent's gone,
Paramount Vantage is gone.
And the companies that are looking at movies, because I have these conversations with them, they're like, maybe this could only do this much business. Maybe it's really not going to break out. Maybe the sex is going to scare people off. And I think they try to find reasons why they shouldn't buy films, because they're worried about spending $10, $15 million when you count advertising for a film that may not work at all.
Well, so we have seen something new this year, which is they're trying to release some of these films through YouTube, the first time that YouTube is charged for streaming of a film. So that's an experiment, right?
I think it is, and I think it's very much the future for independent film. I mean, it cost multiple millions of dollars to release any film in a meaningful way theatrically. And yet YouTube, video on demand, pay TV channels, I think that's the future for independent film. And goodness knows, 2 years from now, there may be a Sundance application on your iPad. You could, you know, get on your new iPad tablet and click on Sundance and see the best movies there. I see the theatrical market for these movies really diminishing, which is unfortunate because a lot of these movies are really good.
Well, on the iPad now, I saw a piece in the New York Times with a release last week. And it sounded to me almost like a fanboy movie. That, you know, it starts out that there's a huge excitement. Then people start getting really negative, and the prognosis for this piece was that then they'll all line up to buy it, just like they line up for tickets to the latest in the X-Men franchise. So I don't know. I mean, it has its shortcomings, right? It doesn't flash play, and it's stuck with the AT&T network, and there was grousing. What do you think?
I think it's, unfortunately, as somebody who kind of grew up reading newspapers and reading books, I think it's the future of how we're going to capture entertainment. And it may not be this application, but I was having breakfast with my 9-year-old today, and he said, "Dad, I think print is dead."
Oh, my God. Speaking of older things... We have just seen the Harrison Ford movie Extraordinary Measures. It did not do well. This was the first film that CBS had started a film label. They, you know, like many in television, there is a long tradition of people in television thinking that movie people are dumb and don't know how to do it and they're going to do it better. And then they seem to have made a movie that was just like one list of don'ts. Older
yeah,
star, mid-priced.
Hallmark Hall of Fame, I think, would be the best thing that comes
sick
to mind.
And children, middle budget, adult drama. I mean, how much more could you go against conventional wisdom?
No, and the reviews were horrible and the word of mouth was equally bad. And I think it just shows that outside of Indiana Jones, Harrison Ford really isn't much of a draw at all.
And I mean, does CBS cut and run, or do they continue? They've got a bunch of movies on that are going, and it seems to me.
You know, the comparable that comes to mind is DreamWorks Animation. Their first film was Prince of Egypt. You know, they tried too hard. They tried to make an important movie that was going to say who they were. And there are some studios that try to overreach and do something almost too meaningful in their first film. And I don't know if Extraordinary Measures is too meaningful, but let's just say they aimed low and they missed.
Well, it seems to me that Hollywood would be very happy to see Les Moonves, the head of CBS, brought up a little short. Like, see, Les, it's not that easy. The Schadenfreude exactly. Festival. And that is all the banter we have time for. Thank you so much, John.
Always a pleasure, Kim. See you next time.
John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. In the early days of television, everything was live.
You're harmless? I'm glad to meet you. I'm Clem Cadillac.
No. My name is Throckmorton. J.P. Throckmorton.
No kidding.
Hey, that's a mighty fine-looking cow you've got.
Isn't that a hunk of beef for you? No kidding, sir, boy. That's a nice cow. Right. Why didn't you think of that all ago? You stop ad-libbing.
On January 22, 1957, everything changed. For the first time, Americans across the country in all time zones saw a program that had been recorded on a videotape.
Philip Morris presents the nation's number one fun game, Truth or Consequences.
Since then, TV's mostly been on tape, with just a small category of shows that are broadcast live. Sports shows, awards shows, and of course, American Idol. In its ninth season, American Idol is still going strong, and I don't think it's a coincidence that this most popular of television shows is live. You have to watch it when it's broadcast because you don't want someone in the office the next day telling you who got tossed, but you also have that chance of seeing something really unexpected, something unscripted that gives the show a little zing. But what makes American Idol fun to watch on TV might make it kind of hair-raising for the people who actually have to put the show together, especially the people who are sitting in that booth, the control room with all the monitors and knobs and the anxiety. In that room, there are key players in two rows. In the back, you have producers and some brass from the network. In the front, you have an array of directors, a lighting director, a technical director, a group of people who make the show look good. Today we're talking with Greg Gelfand, the associate director. He's the guy who's the liaison between all those people up in the booth and the stage manager who runs things down in the trenches on the floor with the singers and the judges and the audience. He says that one presence inevitably in that control room is Mike Darnell, the hyperkinetic head of alternative TV for Fox. You said Mike Darnell was in the booth every show, and
every
you said
show.
Someone else occasionally?
There have been several shows, and they only tell us it's sort of that, you know, that day someone higher up the food chain is coming in. You know, we've seen Peter Lagori in the past. Peter Rice did come in last season when he first took over, but that's
obviously the head of the Fox channel at this point.
Right.
And what about Rupert? Have we seen him? Rupert Murdoch, the owner?
You know what? It's funny. Rupert, I think we have seen from time to time, but I don't know that he ever hangs in the booth. I think he comes in and says hi to everybody, and then he leaves. So,
hi. Thank you very much.
But again, that's maybe once a season, once every several seasons. I don't think I've ever seen him there.
So the top dog in this group that's inside the booth is the director?
Yeah. I mean, the producer and the director have to do the show together, but when the show's running live like that, the director has to call the shots.
So take us inside this room. It is now 5 minutes to air.
Okay.
And what is going on in there?
Depending on the show, whether the rehearsals went well or whether the rehearsals didn't go well or whether the producers want to make some changes, it can be very, very calm or very, very hectic. Typically, 5 minutes before air, something is changing with one of the videotape playbacks. So we're waiting for a tape to come down from upstairs. Our offices and our edit rooms are upstairs on a typical show, not the finale, but on the series. And something is probably changing and some tape is coming down. I don't want to make it sound quite like broadcast news.
That's not quite my favorite thing. That scene with you screaming. I love that scene.
But it has been that bad in the sense that we have gotten certain playback tapes or certain packages while we're on the air. Mm-hmm. We don't like that. We like to make sure that they play right. We like to see them. We like to know when they start and when they finish. But occasionally it happens. I'm on as the associate director in the series. I'm on my headset that I wear. I'm talking to the Fox Broadcast Center. So we're making sure that we're in sync and that they know. They're basically telling me, you know, you're on in 5 minutes, and I'm telling them, believe me, I know. We're making sure that all the areas are up and running and there's no problems. And if someone does have a problem, if an area does have a problem, will it be fixed by the time we get on the air? And if not, how do we get around it?
So what would be a problem that is really a last-minute problem that can't get fixed? I mean, has that happened? Where you?
Yeah, it has happened when we've gone on the air where our graphics generator, which is called a Deco, crashes. Mm-hmm. So the way we get around that is prior to the show that morning, the Deco has input all of their lower third graphics, the phone numbers and those kind of things, mm-hmm. into basically the technical director has a storing facility, a still store, and he'll have to run it. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Get one more button and thing for him to worry about, but we know it's going to get on the air.
You've had a rehearsal. You sort of blocked out your shots and your lighting at that point?
We've rehearsed the performances in the morning with the kids. Prior to that, we've looked at the opening without Ryan. We block it out. He's not there that early. We look at the bumpers.
Everything the bumpers.
When he sends it to the break, when he says "Don't go away, American," you know, we always have a shot of the next kid singing or something. The shot of the judges. We plan that out based on the script. Mm-hmm. Then we have a pseudo dress rehearsal. Usually a dress rehearsal in live TV. We try to run to time, but in Idol we don't really do it. We just want to run the show from top to bottom. To see where if we have any traps, if we can't get somebody from one side of the stage to the other, if the band has a problem with something, if we have a problem moving cameras around, if lights up, you know, any of those kinds of things.
So are the contestants in there walking through it at that
point? They sing. During dress rehearsal, that's their time to sing it one last time before they have to perform it live.
Okay.
And that's their time to sing it.
So now it's 5 seconds before the show is actually going to begin. And
okay.
What is coming out of your mouth?
I'm counting backwards.
Do it.
So basically what I would say, and it's really strange trying to do this now without being in the moment, I would say stand by. Usually you have a piece of videotape or a cold open. I would say we're coming up live in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, roll the tape or up on camera 4 or whatever comes next.
And I hear da-na-na-na-na, a lick.
If we go to the tape first, yes.
Oh, that's right. You have the
so-called
cold open.
Sometimes we count up on a cold open on Ryan.
Which is Ryan saying, it's week 3 and
right.
Blah, blah, blah.
So usually I'd count back from 5 and I would cue the stage manager to cue Ryan and he would start talking and we're off
and running. And in that moment, are you calm or are you like totally chomping on your down?
Well, it's very funny steps. Because now you put me in that moment right now and I feel that a little bit of adrenaline rush.
We've got you like Pavlov's dog.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Just ring a bell. I wouldn't say that I'm calm, but I would say that I've done this long enough that I'm not completely out of control. It's a good adrenaline rush, which is why I got into live television in the first place.
Uh-huh.
So I do like it. I think I can't speak for everybody in live TV, but I think a lot of people have that same mindset. They like performing when they have to perform, whether it's behind the cameras or in front of them.
Uh-huh.
I was a moderately okay athlete, so I sort of equate it to that. You know, when you have to do that, you have to do it now. Now is when you have to do it. And
yes.
I love it. I love it from that standpoint.
So the theory is that you are either drinking heavily or used to drink heavily and in our AA, or perhaps you are a Buddhist monk. What is the person in that booth like? Is there a personality type?
There are lots of different personality types. There are the drinkers and the recovered drinkers and the... I can only speak for myself. I mean, some people get wired up. Look, I'm fairly calm as a person. I'm very low key. I'm very non-confrontational. But when it comes time to do a live television show, I've heard tapes back of myself, and I definitely...
Your voice goes up a few octaves.
It goes up a few octaves. I'm definitely a little bit more... I know that what we talk on is called a private line, a PL. I know that my people probably turn me down when the show starts because my vocal level has gotten quite high.
Uh-huh.
I don't scream and yell unnecessarily. I think I just do it because there's such a din. There's so many things going on. The music's loud and everybody's calling cues, and ultimately, as the director or the associate director, you have to call that final cue or the second to final, the penultimate cue. So you want to make sure you're heard.
If you're just joining us, American Idol associate director Greg Gelfand is giving us a little tour. We're inside the control booth of America's favorite TV show. I asked Greg how they let host Ryan Seacrest know that he is about to go on live in front of millions of people.
Ryan does not wear what we call an IFB in his ear. We have a stage manager out there. Her name's Debbie Williams, and she cues him. So Debbie listens to me or as the associate director or the director, and between the two of us and Debbie, who's out there, she gives him his cues.
Is that some choice of Ryan's? Would most people wear that, and he just doesn't like it?
No, he probably wears something like that when he's on the radio. Mm-hmm. But he's a very, very good television host, and he doesn't need it. He gets the show. He drives the show forward. He captures the moments when they happen, so he doesn't ignore what's going on around him. And when it's time to get the show off the air on time, there aren't many better than he is.
So there, as we know, there are times when you're not on time. There's the infamous Adam Lambert where the DVR cut people's show off and his performance was dropped. When do you get that sinking feeling? This has happened more than once that you've gone a little long.
It has. Again, all shows are different. The way Fox and American Idol run is, although we have a time that we would like to hit, that's not etched in stone.
And that must be pretty rare in television.
It is. The time is a time we try to hit. It's okay if we go a little long. The Adam Lambert show was an anomaly. We never should have gone that long, I don't think. From my opinion, I'm not.
Do you know how it happened? I mean, what was the postmortem on it?
I don't know what happened. I know that we never did that again.
Don't you know? Like, oh my God!
Oh, we know. I know. I know what's going on, and the people in the front of the front row,
right,
can only do so much. We can make suggestions. We can try to push the show along. We can do what we can do. Ultimately, the producers make the call. Fox makes the call, and we go with it.
So let's say we're in the hypothetical show. We won't use the bad thing that happened, and you feel. You can see that you're sliding.
Mm-hmm.
What can you do at that point?
Introductions can be shortened. The talk that happens after the judging happens with Ryan and the judges can be shortened.
Right.
Ryan's good nights can be shortened. Rarely do we drop a tape package, but that can happen.
The real up close and personal with this contestant.
Right. So we don't really want to drop any of that kind of stuff. And,
right.
Sometimes we go in long. And we try to shorten as we go. Sometimes we start to grow because someone has sung really, really well or really, really poorly. And Simon is off and running and the judges are having a good time and it's really great television and we don't want to cut them off.
Right.
Or sometimes they go short. Sometimes they're very terse. And then all of a sudden it's like, how come you're not talking longer?
Yes. Speak up.
So we're at their mercy a little bit. And when they added a fourth judge when we added Kara last year, that sort of increased our time a little bit.
So if it is starting to get long.
The show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somebody started their song over whatever reason.
Right.
Is there someone that has to say it's okay to go long and
yes.
approve it?
Who is that person? Well, I usually turn around behind me and I talk to Ken Warwick, the executive producer, who will either make a call or we will then turn to the Fox executive, which, like I said on this show, Mike Darnell's in the booth every show. So a little confab happens behind me.
Mm-hmm.
If it happens in a commercial break, I'm part of it. If it happens during the show, I let them talk and then I let them tell me what they've come up with and we implement it.
I mean, has there ever been a time when you're like, you know, Scotty on the Enterprise going, I can't make it any shorter. I have a terrible accent. But
well, and you know what? It was fine and I'm going to let it go because you don't want to hear my Scottish accent. We can only do so much. I mean, they can only do so much. I mean, the people that are on the stage are what's driving it. There are producers out on the stage as well who are giving notes and trying to make the show either stretch if we're short, which is very rare, or shorter if we're long, which happens. But again, sometimes it's okay to go a little long, as we've all seen. And sometimes we try to, you know, nip it in the bud and Ryan helps us. It's hard to give you a concrete answer on that. It's different for each show.
So when we see Ryan say back, you know, well, so Simon, you said that was dreadful. Could you please elaborate?
Right.
I could assume somebody is making a hand gesture showing him that that we are short today, it looks like.
No, typically not. Typically Ryan knows because he's off stage when the judges
right.
are judging. So he has an idea. So he knows how much time he can play with.
We'll be back in a minute with our look inside the control booth of American Idol. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. One of the reasons that American Idol is so popular is it's live. For the same reason, it might be hazardous to the health of people who work on the show. Greg Gelfand is one of those key people in the show's control booth. He's the associate director, and one of his responsibilities is keeping the show to time. Of course, the people in the booth are at the mercy of the people in the spotlight, on the stage. And adding a fourth judge last year only made it that much harder to control. And this year we have a new judge, Ellen DeGeneres, who might try to do some comedy, and that probably isn't going to help. Is there a little light that says, you know, this flashing and saying, you know,
there never
up?
Was. We tried to add something to their little monitor to give them sort of a time frame as far as how long they're talking. Not each one, but overall as a panel as a whole. I don't know if they pay attention to it. I think that it's very important that they get their thoughts out. Mm-hmm. And I know that the viewers want to hear that. And again, sometimes the show is really, really good and something really, really good just happened and you don't want to cut it off.
Right.
You got to do it later.
It's gold.
It's gold.
Now, I'm assuming there's things that go wrong that nobody is aware of. I mean, I think I remember something falling one year, which I think you talked about.
Last year.
Yeah.
In dress rehearsal, our stage manager had an accident. And then right before we went on the air, well, because we never got a dress rehearsal that day because of what happened, which was an unfortunate accident, right before one of our, we call them the globes, basically those spinning idol, they're
disco
on the towers.
Balls.
Yeah, those big, huge globes on the other side, stage right and stage left. One of them came loose from its moorings, not the right word, but
right.
I'm not a set designer. It came loose, and it had a safety chain on it, and so it could it have fallen and hurt someone? Sure, but it didn't. But it did fall. It looked it couldn't spin anymore. And Ryan mentioned it on the air.
Yeah. So are there lots of things behind the scenes that we don't see? And when I mean, did he have to mention that because there was no fix for it?
He mentioned it because it was such a nutty day. And because of the accident that Debbie had and because the kids didn't get a dress rehearsal and that show was that day was so different from other days, we just felt like we're not going to hide it because someone's going to see that. Someone knew about it. It's going to be out there on the internet now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just address it. So he mentioned it. There are little things that go wrong all the time. I mean, I think there was something happened two seasons ago with David Cook before we got to the big stage when we were, you know, when they were still eliminating the stage that we have where there's an upstairs red room, that
mm-hmm.
one. He played the guitar pretty much every time he sang. I don't think every time, but pretty much. And we were coming out of commercial and I was counting back and Debbie's screaming at me that the amplifier is not working and audio's not happy and what are we going to do about it? And basically a couple seconds before we came back, they got the whole amp off the stage. Which there's not a lot of room in that little stage, if you remember. And he sang it without his guitar, and he did a great job. And obviously it didn't cost him anything because he went on to win.
Yes,
but,
he did.
But that was a moment where we weren't sure what was going to happen.
I mean, there was a year, I think maybe that same year, one of the contestants did a start over in the middle of her song.
Brooke.
Yeah. And do you sit there and say, geez, you know, you weren't supposed to do that. You just started over in the middle of a song.
You know, she wasn't supposed to do it, but she did it and it's live TV and you just go. There's nothing you can do about it. I mean, Ryan did it once, I think, with his cold open. We had he couldn't read the teleprompter.
I remember that, actually.
And I got to tell you something.
I'm a shameless fan. Yeah.
Ryan did it. I don't remember if it was three seasons ago. And I have to be perfectly honest with you. We cued him. I did. I mean, as the associate director, I counted in the show. We cued him. And I happened to look down for a second to make sure, you know, turn my script page or whatever. And he said, let's start again. And my stomach sank because I thought maybe I did something wrong. And then we realized what happened and... You know, it was good. He saved it. He couldn't read it. It would have looked really stupid if he tried to squint his, you know, he called the camera over and we did it again and it was okay. And Pass,
so
it was the top of the show.
Let me just try to just break that down a little for the amateurs like me. So how is it supposed to work and how did it work?
Here's how it happens 99.9% of the time. We have a cold open planned.
Meaning this is like he's talking, he hasn't, it's not, we're not hearing the music yet, it's like he's setting it up.
He's setting up the show, we try to make it as dramatic as possible, so it's usually a moving camera with some dramatic lighting and we find Ryan, or Ryan is walking out of the dark, or something to that extent.
Right.
This time, if I remember correctly, and I may not be, I think what happened was the cameraman, who has a Steadicam which moves, that camera that moves, got caught. It wasn't his fault. It was no one's fault. But I think between the distance he was from Ryan and the way the lights were hitting the camera lens and the teleprompter at that moment, mm-hmm. Ryan couldn't see it. Or it was a little far. I just think it was one of those circumstances that just it happened at the right time at the right place for something to happen incorrectly.
Right.
And Ryan didn't see the word properly, I think is what happened. And so instead of not saying what he was supposed to say and not, you know, he said, hey, Dave, I think that's what he did. Dave is our Steadicam operator. He called him back and he said, come over here. And Dave walked back into him and then they started it again.
Well, I guess that's part of the thrill of it all, right? Is hoping to see a little bit of a screw up and catch the people with their slip showing.
Well, I think people enjoy that. And we prefer not to, you know, we'd like to have a nice clean show, but right. It doesn't happen every time.
So at the end of the show, you run this montage of the highlights from everybody's performance, you know, the recap, mm-hmm. Which I assume the people in the Warren upstairs are frantically cutting as you are doing the show because are those pulled from dress rehearsal? Aha, the dirty little secret. They are. He's nodding.
The dirty little secret. Again, there are shows where we can build those on the fly. Mm-hmm. That's a producer choice. This show, we take those little snippets from dress rehearsal.
So you are the director of the finale?
Yes, I've done the last two. The finale is incredibly different. I mean, they're not competing anymore. So that whole factor...
You can plan that better, I guess.
Well, if we had a lot more time, we could plan it a lot better. Yeah, we have a couple of days to rehearse that whole show. And that's a lot of performances. I think last year's show was 15 performances, and then the two sort of smaller performances that I call them, the thing with Kara and the thing with the Golden Idol, those things.
I won't say anything about that.
but there was a good 15 performances in addition to the little tapes that we have to get to and the little things here and there and naming the winner. And that's a lot of show. And in a very jam packed rehearsal schedule.
Do you have like the worst week of your life when that happens?
No, it's just a long week, just a lot of hours, just a lot of rehearsing, a lot of planning from every standpoint, not just mine. I mean, the lighting directors have a lot to do. Ricky Miner and the band has a lot of music that they have to deal with.
Yeah, I don't know how they do that. Honestly,
yeah, the choreographers. We have so many of those group numbers on the finale.
It's quite
with
a, quite
all
an
the
operation.
Kids, and I love all the kids every year dearly, believe me. But a lot of them can't dance, and nor can I. So
you're not crafting.
I'm not. Yeah, I'm not criticizing that way. But they, you know, they're not dancers; they're singers, and so it's hard for them.
Now, when the show is done, what do you guys do? Do you all go out and, have a meal, or do you just are you wrung out and, you know, rode hard and put away wet? Kind of.
I wouldn't go that far. We have to do too many shows a season and too many a week. Everybody goes up. Everybody. Most people go upstairs to the office. Most people actually have a desk up there. We don't. We work out of the booth, so I sort of put
no
my script.
Desk.
I don't
so
have anything.
Long.
It's okay. It's the lifestyle I've chosen. The script department does hold my binders for me, so I throw it in their office. Sometimes I'll have a snack or something like that, or something to drink. And sometimes we'll get called into a little meeting and say, hey, what happened? Or hey, this is what we want to do tomorrow. More often than not, it's here's what we want to do tomorrow night show.
Well, certainly, Idol is quite a juggernaut of a show. I assume you'll be in the booth for season 10.
Nothing. There are no guarantees in our business, but I hope so.
Greg Gelfand is the associate director of American Idol, and he's directed the past two season finales. His other credits include We Are One, the Obama inaugural celebration at the Lincoln Memorial, and the Michael Jackson Memorial Service. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
And that's The Business. Matt Holzman produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Darby Maloney is our associate producer. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Gromit. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it on your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.